June 16, 1904, an ordinary Thursday in Dublin that became one of literature's most extraordinary Dublin. In the hands of James Joyce, these 24 hours expand into a universe of human experience. Ulysses follows three principal characters: Stephen Dedalus, a brooding intellectual haunted by his mother's death; Leopold Bloom, a middle-aged Jewish advertising canvasser whose day includes preparing breakfast, attending a funeral, and wandering Dublin while knowing his wife plans an afternoon affair; and Molly Bloom, who remains in bed until the novel's famous unpunctuated finale. What makes this seemingly mundane day revolutionary is how Joyce elevates ordinary life to epic significance. By deliberately paralleling Homer's Odyssey, with Bloom as Odysseus, Stephen as Telemachus, and Molly as Penelope, Joyce suggests that heroism in modern life lies not in grand exploits, but in enduring the everyday with compassion and curiosity. Bloom's simple kindness, scientific mindset, and tolerance make him heroic in a world of prejudice and nationalism. Imagine finding more meaning in a man buying kidney for breakfast than in slaying mythical monsters. That's the radical perspective Joyce offers. Have you ever noticed how your thoughts actually flow? Not in neat sentences, but in fragments, associations, and memories triggered by your surroundings. Before Joyce, literature had never truly captured this reality. His stream of consciousness technique creates unprecedented intimacy. We don't just observe Bloom or Stephen, we inhabit their minds, experiencing Dublin through their senses and thoughts. When Bloom watches a young woman on the beach, his thoughts blend desire, shame, memory, and scientific curiosity in an authentic psychological portrait. Unlike the articulate interior monologues of earlier fiction, Joyce's characters think with grammatical errors and constant intrusion of bodily sensations. Stephen's consciousness brims with literary allusions, while Bloom's mind works through practical problems and curiosities. This technique culminates in Molly's famous final monologue, nearly 50 unpunctuated pages as she remembers her past and contemplates her marriage. What makes this revolutionary isn't just the technique itself, but its psychological truth. Joyce understood how humans actually think better than any writer before him. Ulysses reinvents itself with each chapter, employing different narrative techniques throughout, what critic Hugh Kenner called a laboratory of narrative techniques. Starting with straightforward narration, the novel quickly becomes experimental. Aeolus, set in a newspaper office, fragments into headlines and journalistic prose. Sirens structures itself like a musical fugue, beginning with sound fragments that develop into full sentences, incorporating over 60 musical terms. Lines like "bronze by gold heard the hoof iron, steely ringing," transform Dublin scenes into musical compositions. In Oxen of the Sun, set in a maternity hospital, Joyce traces English prose evolution from Anglo-Saxon through Victorian sentimentality to contemporary slang, paralleling a child's gestation. He mimics dozens of literary styles, from Malory to Dickens. This stylistic virtuosity isn't mere showing off. It demonstrates language's constant evolution and playful unreliability. The shifting styles reflect the novel's theme of transformation and its refusal to present a single, stable reality. In Joyce's world, how something is said becomes as important as what is said. Joyce scandalized early 20th century readers by refusing to idealize the human body in Ulysses, creating one of literature's most groundbreaking portrayals of physical existence. Unlike previous works that ignored bodily functions or used euphemisms, his characters eat, defecate, menstruate, masturbate, and experience flatulence with unflinching realism, a major reason for the novel's censorship until 1934. Throughout the day, Bloom's bodily functions punctuate his consciousness, salivating at the smell of kidneys, urinating in his garden, and experiencing digestive discomfort. This focus on the body isn't merely provocative, but philosophically significant, challenging the Western tradition that separates mind from body. Thoughts in Ulysses are never purely intellectual, but always embodied, influenced by hunger, desire, and physical sensations. When Bloom contemplates the cosmos, his philosophical musings are interrupted by digestive rumblings. Molly's final monologue, where physical sensations and memories intertwine inseparably, suggests our bodily experiences aren't separate from our intellectual and spiritual lives, but fundamental to them. Dublin in Ulysses is a city haunted by absences, where characters are defined by what they've lost. Stephen is shadowed by his dead mother's ghost, demanding penance for his refusal to pray at her deathbed. Bloom carries twin specters, his father who committed suicide, and his infant son Rudy, who died days after birth. These ghosts actively shape identity throughout the novel. Names exist as unstable entities. Leopold appears as Poldy to his wife and Poply to his daughter. His family name changed from the Hungarian Virag to Bloom as his father sought social acceptance. Yet Leopold ironically uses Henry Flower as his pseudonym in correspondence. When a mysterious funeral attendee appears, he's transformed into Mintatosh in the newspaper, identity reduced to a misunderstood garment. This approach to naming reveals Joyce's concern with how language both creates and manipulates identity. Even Dublin becomes a character whose identity shifts, its streets taking on different meanings depending on the observer. Ulysses thus examines not just particular characters, but the very nature of selfhood in the modern world. At the heart of Ulysses lies a meditation on artistic creation. Through Stephen Dedalus, we explore the young artist's struggle to find his authentic voice amid overwhelming literary influences. Stephen contemplates Irish writers who achieved immortality while questioning how he might avoid becoming a conglomerate of other people's thoughts. Joyce resolves this artistic dilemma through the novel's form. Unlike the paralyzed Stephen, Joyce embraces literary tradition while transforming it into something radically new. In the Oxen of the Sun episode, he treats earlier literary styles as raw material for transformation. By highlighting the relationship between authorship and reading, Joyce suggests readers are co-creators, undermining traditional notions of originality. His achievement parallels Mina Purefoy's childbirth in the episode, a creative labor producing something connected to the past, yet undeniably new. Isn't this the fundamental challenge for all creative people? How to honor influences while finding a unique voice? And yes, I said, yes, I will, yes. With these famous words, Joyce concludes his masterpiece not with closure, but with radical openness. The final 50 pages belong to Molly Bloom in an unpunctuated interior monologue that has captured readers for a century. This revolutionary conclusion gives voice to a woman whose thoughts flow through association rather than logic, spanning from past lovers to her marriage to bodily reflections. Molly's yes simultaneously looks backward to her relationships beginning with Leopold and forward to possible reconciliation. Rather than resolving conflicts, the ending opens into possibility, suggesting continuation rather than finality. This refusal of closure embodies Joyce's modernist vision, where meaning emerges from the interplay of language, consciousness, and embodied experience. Ulysses reminds us that profound truth often lies not in resolution, but in the courage to say yes to life's complexity and contradictions.